remember that, and also submit them formally to Parliament in time. But obviously, in the next few meetings, we just have to go through the last year's reports. I'll definitely, with the committee secretary, work very, very much hard on that. Thank you. Now, let me welcome Minister Tipuwo Peters and her team, who are going to take us through an update on the implementation of INEP, or the Integrated National Electrification Program. Over to you, Minister Peters.
Thank you, Chairperson.
Oh, sorry, before that, thank you very much for coming, in spite of the pressure. Remember, Wednesdays are cabinet days, so it's such an effort for to break away from there. And let me thank the cabinet for releasing you, even if it's for brief. Thank you.
Honorable Chairperson, members of the committee, I just want to take this opportunity to thank you once more for an opportunity for the Department of Energy to come and present before you one of the key instruments for poverty alleviation and poverty relief in South Africa. You would know, ladies and gentlemen, that honorable members, that this is one of the key intervention strategies that would make it possible that we can, as a sector, give the people of South Africa a better life. We as a department are fully aware of the challenges that communities that are still not connected have, and are very aware of the enormous challenges that young people also, who are still subjected to studying under conditions where they fear either the candle falling and creating a hazard for the family or the community. And I know that quite a number of the communities that are waiting are very impatient, and they've got the right to be impatient because this program has been running for quite some time now. Honorable members, this is one of the programs that is going to make it possible for us as South Africa to deliver on the MDGs of having poverty and unemployment in particular. As we sit, we know that we have been able to electrify about 75% of South Africa, and we know that the challenges of the communities that are not electrified in the areas of KZN, Eastern Cape and Limpopo are enormous. Some of the challenges in these areas are not are budgetary in the first instance. Secondly, some of the challenges are related to the topography or the geographic location and makeup of the areas in which we need to electrify. And the others are actually informal settlements, which, because of the nature of the settlement or the way the people have position themselves in the settlement, it makes it difficult to be electrified. The department would also give an indication about the areas that have been identified as having serious challenges of electrification. The other serious challenge that we have is related to probably what the department would present as the misalignment of the financial years, where we've got challenges in terms of the timelines in terms of the transfer of the monies for the municipalities, but also the process that departments or the municipalities are engaged in to make it possible that they can spend the money. We also have a big challenge of, as a department, coming up with a strategy of saying that we need to reverse or take the money from non-spending municipalities to municipalities that are spending. That is actually going to result in a situation where you take from the poorest of the poor and take it from the poorest of the poor in situations of areas where they don't have control. Like, for example, municipalities like Nhlonhlo have indicated to me in particular that they are unable to monitor progress in the municipality, primarily because they don't have capacity. And as a department, because we have got a responsibility constitutionally to support municipalities, we are also challenged in terms of the capacity in the department to do that. The other thing that we believe we need to look into is how we could make it possible that we can address, the department calls this the plan, the delivery on a plan, where we've got to electrify houses in areas where where we have to give budgets or money to municipalities which have not as yet built the houses, where the houses are not yet delivered, or alternatively, let me say, we've got to respond or deliver based on the available units. And if the units are not there, we've got a challenge in terms of rolling out the services. But also the other challenge is, like for example, in KZN, in the areas of where there's been political challenges, I would say, where there would be areas that have been electrified and others have been jumped because of political reasons, which we call islands. It is matters that we are dealing with the MEC in KZN to make sure that those islands are being addressed. But I believe that the department will be able to give a proper presentation about the total situation of all the municipalities where there's delays in terms of rollout, where the projects have been committed, but there are particular challenges that are probably technical. But also the other thing that we believe we need support of the committee on is in relation to the size of the budget that has been allocated for this INEP. We believe that with the size of this budget, we won't be able to attain universal access by 2014. Or alternatively, we are not going to be able to roll out at the pace at which we are expected to roll out the connectivity of the houses that are not yet connected. The one other challenge that we will be addressing in this presentation is the issue of the lower expenditure in the home solar systems. And we have decided that because of the fact that we had challenges in the acceptance of this particular system in the communities, we'll be working together with the Department of Rural Development to make sure that as they enter particular communities, we could then be able to piggyback and work together with them to make sure that where they have been able to get acceptance. Because if we come in as a department, people say in the urban centers you are putting in the grid systems and in the urban rural areas you are bringing off grid systems. And these are the things that I thought that the presentation would be speaking to. Chairperson, after the presentation has been made, I would probably just take one question and then be able to be released because there's also a joint cabinet committee which brings all the cabinet members together to deal with particular issues as we speak today. It was just way of introduction.
Thank you very much, Minister Peters. I'm sure members have taken note your inputs, particularly the challenges that have raised, and particularly areas where you appeal for our support and any other active contribution. Floor is yours, Mkulu.
Chairperson, thank you very much. Good morning, honorable members. My name is Ompia Pani. Then I will be taking you through the presentation. Thank you, Minister. Thank you, DG.
Take us through your wonderful presentation, we see that you are a large team. We know some faces. We don't know some. We really would love to know all of them right at the beginning of the year.
Can we start with Mr. Bezaden out at the back, please?
Good morning, Chairperson, honorable members. My name is Gareth Bezaden. I'm the Chief of Staff in the Office of the Minister.
Good morning, Chairperson. Good morning, honorable members. I'm David Lyons, Senior Manager, Capital Program for INEP.
Thank you, Chairperson, for the opportunity, and good morning to the Parliamentary Committee members. My name is Nontandla Ndebele. I'm from the Office of the Director General.
Good morning, honorable members and Chairperson. My name is Mahaung Kesi. I am the Acting Executive Manager for the INEP program.
Good morning, honorable Chair members. I'm Khomole Moluka, the Political Advisor to the Minister.
Thank you, Chairperson. Honorable members, my name is Melisiwe Makubane. I'm the Director General of the Department of Energy.
Chairperson and honorable members, my name is Ndivuo Kangare. I'm from the Department of Energy Communications Directorate.
Members, the communication person sitting right in obscurity. You're welcome, Nick.
Thank you, Chairperson. Maybe to start off by indicating that we will be doing a slide presentation that we believe covers a lot of the issues that Minister has raised, but we have a few laptops around today, so if there's any other additional information, we are ready to provide it as well, to the extent that it might not have been covered under this. To put the Integrated National Electrification Program into perspective, is that it was endorsed as an integral part of government's RDP initiative. And the point about this is that initially ESCOM had started this program on a voluntary basis around 1991, and then government took it over and took the responsibility of funding it out of the fiscus from then. The current drive and focus of the department is to ensure that we increase access to electricity from a current level of about 81% to 92% by 2014. So that is our, if you like, the reason that we do certain things. In terms of our objectives, is that we manage the planning, the funding, and the implementation of the program insofar as it achieves universal access in the timelines. We focus on planning within the INEP. We have what we call the INEP Business Planning Unit within the department. It does the planning. We also manage the funding allocation process, and this is linked with the Division of Revenue Act, which we negotiate every year with National Treasury as to the level of funding allocation that is put in the program. We also do some monitoring as required, in other words, so that we can come and report to you regarding the progress of the project and how it meets its objectives. The Integrated National Electrification Program must be seen in the context of other programs that complement the electrification program. Just to understand that the electrification process is a service to a broader housing program. In other words, if there is no houses, we do not electrify, and as such we are a service. We do not initiate the project out of context. Within the housing delivery program is what is called the Breaking New Ground, as an example, where we try and integrate the approaches, including electrification, water and sanitation, and the rest of the other services that go into it. This also tries to deal with the matter of informal settlements, because as you will see later in the presentation, this has become one of the biggest challenges that we face. And as Minister has already indicated, all of this is pursuant to an outcome in the government program of action to alleviate poverty and to create jobs. And we'll see towards the end just what the impact of the electrification program is. Give you a snapshot there. We do this with the full participation of local government in the planning and the implementation processes, to the extent that government, or rather local government, is required to go through what is called an IDP, Integrated Development Planning process. We ensure that our approach is linked with the IDP processes, so that we do not create a misalignment between expectations on the ground. Just to give you a sense about what we're talking about today, very briefly, is that the generation aspect in number one is around the power stations. We're not going to touch on that today. Aspect number two, and this portion here, is the transmission part. We do not intend to cover this today. Insofar as municipalities and the lines to what we call the distribution substations. We'll talk a little bit about these distribution substations. We call them bulk substations. Mm-hmm. Insofar as municipalities, distribution substations, the lines that go into the houses themselves, that is what we will be touching on today. Chairperson, also to indicate that we are focusing today only on the capital program. In other words, the creation of the assets. We also appreciate that there are serious challenges in relation to the management of the assets. In other words, having created the asset, what are the challenges that are commonplace in the municipal space, including the billing issues, including the disconnections, including, you know, poor maintenance and so on. This is not the focus of our presentation today. If you recall, this was part of the whole electricity distribution industry restructuring process, but we are available to answer some questions if there are any. Now, just in terms of our approach to achieving our objective of universal access, is that we do it on two fronts. We recognize that there are certain areas in the country which do not have any bulk infrastructure, so to speak, and as such, we use what we call non-grid or off-grid technologies as well. And this complements the grid program, in terms of which, by and large, we provide a 20 amp free connection. And we say free connection because the cost of providing that connection currently sits at about 6,000 rands per household, but we provide that for free. There is a nominal connection fee that we charge, and that is what we provide. In some instances, municipalities want to provide a higher level of service, and they provide what is called a 60 amp connection, so that they are then able to run additional appliances and so on. In that regard, the 60 amp connection does attract a connection fee which is higher. It's not a nominal amount, because we believe that that would not necessarily be affordable in the context of the broader electrification program. In terms of the non-grid program, we will touch very briefly on that. We install what we call solar home systems. The solar home systems in the residential or in the households component involve the introduction of a 50-watt free connection under what we call the concession program, but also to indicate that the INEP program does not only deal with households, incidentally. It deals with households, it deals with schools and clinics. And insofar as some of those clinics and schools are very far away from the grid, we do have a program that will indicate that provides a solar home system which provides some of the basic necessities. Now, just to close the loop, once we have done that, we also recognize that in some communities, in so-called qualifying households, it becomes a little bit difficult for them to use the electricity and to avoid it becoming a white elephant because people cannot afford. We provide what we call free basic electricity, FBE, or free basic alternative energy in the context of grid solutions. So where the grid is connected, is available, where we've connected the households to the grid, we give them 50 kilowatt hours every month for free. Where they don't have a grid and they have an off-grid solution like solar water heating, we provide an additional discount in relation to the monthly fee for service that they're supposed to levy. We want to now give you a sense of the kind of challenge that I'm sure you're familiar with, but I think this also puts it into context as to what we're dealing with. That in the rural areas, this is typically, you know, the kind of problem that we have addressed in the past, right, where settlements have tended to be along the lines indicated here, and we do not have a problem with this. But by and large, this is becoming an urban, informal area kind of problem. And this is in the metropolitan area of the city of Tshwane. And, you know, in this kind of geographic location and dispersion and so on, we do not have a problem electrifying at this subject, for example, to the land being safe, it's not on dolomite, and so on. The problem is when it gets to this kind of level, and this is just also in the same area just across the road, that it becomes near impossible to provide services in this kind of dispensation. Incidentally, some of these areas here, some of these households here are connected or originally connected, but because they become densified, then you have a lot more what we call illegal connections. You have more cannibalization where people just tap off into somebody's house and it's a small business that runs and so on. We will come back to this as to what we try to do in these instances. Then the other type of problem that we want to bring to your attention is, you know, the sparsely populated densification kind of arrangement, like what we typically find. You can't see this because it's two-dimensional. But apart from the houses being very far apart, the other problem could also be the terrain. Like I'm saying, you can't see, but there is a river that's running around here, or shall we say a stream that's running around here, and the topology makes it extremely expensive to electrify those kind of areas. This, I believe, is the sum total of our challenge in terms of what we're trying to address. It's basically the urban areas that are not, you know, structured in the way that they are built, the rural areas to the extent that they are sparsely populated, but also to the extent that they need a lot of new infrastructure. Now, in terms of the funding model, and we're going to focus today mainly on the fiscal program, but Chairperson also to indicate that we are aware that with the fiscal program, we will not be able to, you know, move as fast as what we would like. So we're exploring other angles as well, and amongst which would be, for example, the mobilization of the development financial institutions. The DBSA has expressed very keen interest in facilitating some of these innovative funding approaches, if you like. But we're focusing today on the grid and the non-grid electrification program, as per the fiscal allocations by National Treasury. But to also indicate that over and above that, we have some donor funding in the non-grid program. The solar water heating program is donor funded as well. The likes of the EU and KfW is the German Development Financial Institution, is providing some money. I think we have some 200 million rands at the moment from them in terms of that. And then, I think the problem that Minister alluded to is the implementing agents. We use ESCOM in those areas where ESCOM is the license holder, and then municipalities, where the municipalities are the license holder, and we also use the what we call the concessionaires, largely for the non-grid solar heating system. Now, the point about ESCOM and the municipal solar home system, sorry, not solar water. Thanks, Tisha. The point about ESCOM and the municipalities, I think it needs to be appreciated that it's a historical point, is that even where municipalities have jurisdiction, because we have wall-to-wall municipalities, in some instances, ESCOM is the implementing agent for those reasons. In other instances, some municipalities have approached ESCOM in order to take away that responsibility from ESCOM and transfer it into the municipality. And yet, in other instances, the municipalities have asked ESCOM to assist in the implementation of the program. And it creates numerous dynamics on the ground. But just to indicate that in relation to some of those dynamics, we try and manage that by insisting that ESCOM, notwithstanding that they are the implementing agent in their licensed areas, have to go through an IDP process with the municipality. In other words, they have to have the municipality sign off on what ESCOM wants to do in their area of jurisdiction. Very quickly, a snapshot of the households backlog picture in the country. KZN leads in terms of the number of households that are not electrified. Incidentally, this is a snapshot from last year. As you are also aware, we will be doing I think government will undertake a census this year, so we will now get a revised picture after that. But I think this is a good indication of where the problem areas are. Is KZN with the biggest, and then Gauteng, surprise, surprise, and we'll touch on why Gauteng is up there, and then Eastern Cape and Limpopo. On the opposite side of that picture is the Northern Cape, Northwest, and the Western Cape, and we believe that we will be able to reach universal access in those provinces very, very shortly as we deal with the other problems of universal access. Now, just to classify the problem, just three quick points here, is that if we look, for example, at KZN in terms of the 24% backlog, it's very clear that this is predominantly 650,000 households are in the rural area. So it's not like there is a problem there, apart from putting bulk infrastructure in place and then addressing it. And I'm not going to think the same picture is prevalent in the Eastern Cape. You can see very small informal backlogs. The bulk of it is in formal houses. But if you look at Gauteng, for example, the formal houses that need electrification is only 143,000, and a big number of them is in the informal settlements in terms of the picture that we have shown you. And it also addresses, or rather informs, the strategies that we adopt in order to try and deal with that. And in the fiscal context, we have in 2010-11 been allocated 2.8 billion rands from National Treasury, and it was allocated municipal, ESCOM, and the off-grid programs as indicated there. As you can see, most of the allocations are on the ESCOM side at 1.7 billion rands, and then the following year ESCOM is also much higher than the municipal program. But by around 2012-13, you see that we're trying to now even out the allocations between ESCOM and municipalities, and it is largely because we think that ESCOM would have done most of the work in those rural areas, particularly around the bulk areas, and then the program around informal settlements would also take effect. Just in terms of the total number of connections we expect from municipalities, 80,000, and then 100,000 from municipalities, a total of 190,000. Now, the point about this is that at the level of about 190,000, and you can divide 190,000 into, shall we say, 2.4 million, you will see that it will take a very long time. It will take more than 10 years before we get to universal access at the level of connections that we're making there. And that's why we're saying that we need to revisit this approach from an innovative funding perspective. And even when we increase the allocations, right, you must remember that the cost of the capital cost is increasing as well. There's inflationary increases and so on that are just keeping up with the level of allocation. So that's the kind of funding problem that we have. Don't read too much into the thing. If you can just follow the blue portion of the line, of the graph. So in other words, this profile here indicates, I'm sorry, it's purple on the screen. This indicates the level to which we have to increase the program in order to achieve universal access by that point. In other words, if we were to finish everything by around 2013, 2014, we would have to increase the annual allocations, which estimated by about 40% at least. We're also saying that in the purple, the 2015-16 scenario can be achieved at a certain level of connections. In other words, in terms of which we would have to go to around 250,000 houses every year, then we'd be able to achieve that. The white indicates the baseline. In other words, business as usual. If we were to carry on along these lines of funding without introducing additional fiscal allocations, without looking at non-fiscal allocations, in other words, what I refer to, for example, as the innovative funding with the DBAs and so on, this will carry on until around 2022, 2023. So we will not, it will be like just going ahead and like that. And And over and above that, there is the population growth size, sorry, population growth issue that is not included in this. So as the population grows as well, the human settlement patterns become more complex and numbers increase as well, and this will not actually get there. Incidentally, just to also define what we mean by a backlog. A backlog would be in the context of a house, formal or informal, that has been standing for some time without electrification. So basically, when we build the houses, right, and we do not provide the electricity, that constitutes a backlog. We need to make a distinction between this in relation to new houses. So when new houses are built, you know, the plan is that they get electrified, so they do not constitute backlog as such. Now, in the context of the funding constraint, how do we then allocate the scarce resources, so to speak? First of all, we look at the backlog status. And the backlog status that we look at is everything from a provincial to a district municipal to a local municipal perspective. So in other words, what is the picture in the Eastern Cape relative to the picture in the Western Cape? And the picture there that are quite contrasting, and therefore the Eastern Cape would have a favorable allocation profile relative to the Western Cape and so on. We also look at what the municipalities themselves have identified as their priorities in the integrated development planning process. The Integrated Sustainable Rural Development Program is a very big consideration, because we are we favor those initiatives, as Minister has alluded, that, for example, the Department of Rural Development is tasked with now, about rural development in terms of government's own program of action. And we have a rural bias in the allocation criteria. The developmental nodes, where there had been some areas that were identified as being, if you like, poverty nodes, and that certain serious intervention needs to happen there, and that's where we look at in terms of priorities. I think Minister did allude to this one. The past performance of the licensed distributors is a very big consideration, because we believe that we run into trouble if we come here and we say we did not spend the money or the municipality did not spend the money. However, it creates other problems, because typically what happens is that it is those, you know, marginal municipalities that are not able to perform, and are we really being fair by taking the money away from them, because that's where typically the poorest of the poor find themselves. But I think we need to find some solution around how we deal with those issues. And then the issue of the existence of completed houses. So basically we say, you know, if the houses have been constructed, for example, under the Housing Department of Human Settlements program, you know, we want to align with that program and integrate by providing services there. And therefore, you know, the Breaking New Ground program is a very serious priority in terms of allocation. Proclaimed and unproclaimed, this is a bit of a tricky one. Most of the informal areas tend to be unproclaimed for a number of reasons, maybe because the process has not concluded, but by and large, or sometimes the process has concluded and the area has been deemed unsafe for human settlement. And yet there are hundreds, perhaps even thousands of houses that are informal that are located in that area. So how we deal with this is that much as there is a program that prefers the proclaimed, we are in a situation right now with the local municipalities, particularly the metros, in terms of which we enter into an undertaking. And the undertaking is that even though the houses are not, or the area is not proclaimed, we will provide services, provided that the municipality undertakes that they will not move those people like the next day or so on. So in other words, it would be like an unproclaimed, semi-permanent kind of settlement that we would want to have confirmation around. And then obviously the backlog from the previous year, and I'm saying backlog in the context that, you know, some houses or some projects are not fundable in the same financial year because of the pressure on funding, so they get put into the next round.
Now, in the short term, the Integrated National Electrification Program wants to achieve specific objectives. And when you say in the short term, it's almost like in the current medium-term expenditure framework. First of all, we're saying that we would like to have a situation where there are no RDP houses that are completed and they don't have electricity. In the short term, all existing RDP houses must have a grid connection. And we look at a framework of around 2 years, and we have already mapped it out as to which projects have been completed and which will be completed, and we're wanting to prioritize that in an integrated approach, and there are engagements with the Department of Human Settlements in order to align these processes. Last year, there were a lot of service delivery protests, and perhaps from our perspective, certainly, we did not want to be part of the reason that people were engaged in service delivery protests. Let it rather be somebody else, but let it not be electricity. And we identified those hotspots in order to ensure that the provision of electricity was not a reason for them. I have mentioned the issue of breaking new grounds, particularly in the metros, in the secondary cities where government's program of housing delivery is on an integrated approach, and therefore, I suppose in the same way, we did not want to lag behind where houses are built, there's water sanitation, and yet there's no electrification. The minister did give us our marching orders regarding schools and clinics, and I think we did make some presentation to the committee at some point, or maybe not this committee, about universal access to schools and clinics. We believe that we have reached universal access to clinics, even in the rural areas, as I've already indicated, but through the Solar Home Systems Program as well, and I'll touch on that later on. But in terms of schools, just to flag, Chairperson, that we have embarked on a process with the Department of Education, with the Departments of Education in all the provinces, in terms of which we identified all the schools, all the formal school structures, but we also identified those schools that needed to be consolidated because there was a rationalization process within the Department of Education. We also wanted to get a sense which schools would be discontinued and so on, so that we do not create white elephants by electrifying schools today and then they're closed tomorrow. As an outcome of that process, we have now got to a point where, according to our information, all the schools that were part of that identification process have been electrified. But we're flagging this specifically because you still get information that says a particular school does not have access to electricity, and it's a process that we are trying to address with the respective departments of education. And as such, we still believe that we want to achieve universal access to schools in a manner that is not contested. Then the issue of bulk infrastructure, and if I can just take you back to the slide with the rural settlement pattern there, is that what happens in those areas, particularly in Limpopo, Eastern Cape, and KZN, if there are no bulk substations in place in the vicinity, you will not be able to open up the area for electrification. And as such, we have embarked upon a program to build bulk infrastructure in targeted areas of the Eastern Cape and KZN in particular. We have also identified a specific problem where there might be bulk infrastructure in place, but the bulk infrastructure is in a state of disrepair, and as such it's creating a bottleneck around the electrification of projects downstream. So we're wanting to upgrade those bulk substations so that we can then proceed with the electrification. But unfortunately what it then does is that it creates a dimension of upgrading, whereas this is about creating new infrastructure, we also do upgrading of existing infrastructure. And it creates its own dynamics. I mean, the question is, where do you prioritize? Is it fair to give those that already have access a much better service, or would you rather extend the service at the risk of, you know, keeping those that are already connected in a state of, you know, poor service delivery? And it's a contest that we have to address. Just in terms of the municipal program, and I think we're wanting to address the question that Minister raised earlier, or the comment that she made. As indicated in this column here, even on the municipal side, some 184 million, which is perhaps just under 20% of the allocation goes into the creation of bulk infrastructure in the Eastern Cape. Some in the Free State, I think there was a backlog on the municipal side in that regard, and then Mpumalanga and the Northern Cape, so that we can conclude there. And then the rest of the money goes into the households program in the current financial year. And the 104,000 connections is what we are targeting as an outcome. And I must apologize because we omitted a slide here and we deleted it by mistake as to what the current performance is, and we'll just shoot there. We will show you how the municipal program has performed in relation to this particular 2010-11 program so far, and then the issue of how we deal with the mismatch in the municipal financial years relative to our financial year. I don't know. Okay, if I'm carrying on in relation to the ESCOM program, the point here is that the bulk infrastructure program, as indicated here, 143 million rands in this financial year goes into bulk infrastructure creation in Caledon, and then about 100 million in the Eastern Cape, and then some money goes into Gauteng and the Western Cape and Northern Cape in terms of the ESCOM program. Sorry. The ESCOM program is supposed to deliver the 94,000 households, and in total, this is how we get to the 180,000-190,000 connections that can be delivered in the financial year. The allocations are allocated, or rather are provided, in terms of those criteria that I've already alluded to.
Just what period is that?
This is 10-11. This is the current.
Even on ESCOM?
Even on ESCOM, this
okay.
is
10-11. Okay.
And then, in terms of ESCOM progress in this current financial year to date, and when we say to date, it's as at the last, as at December, we report that, but a few months behind schedule, is that maybe let's start with the performance in relation to the number of the planned connections as to the actuals, right? Is that of the 27,000 connections in the Eastern Cape, so far only 7,900 have been achieved, and this indicates, you know, some serious catching up to do there. Incidentally, what tends to happen in the implementation process is that there is what we call the hockey stick approach. So in other words, nothing happens for a very long time, and then towards the end, everything happens. The Free State is doing very nicely. They're almost complete with their program. In fact, they will want to achieve slightly more than what they have planned. Gauteng is also on track. KZN is lagging behind a little bit. Limpopo is on track. And then Mpumalanga, slightly behind. Northwest, slightly behind. Northern Cape, almost there. Western Cape, slightly behind. And overall, of the 95,000 planned connections, total connections that have been planned, 58% or 58,000 of them have been. So it's like a 6/9. It's a 60% kind of performance with about 3 months to go. By and large, on the ESCOM side, we do not have problems because ESCOM plans ahead and will indicate what happens in the planning process, in the pre-planning cycle in the next few slides. The issue is the municipalities, and I'm going to come back to the municipal performance as soon as I get a chance to find it on my flash disk, and I apologize around that. Now, here is the program in the next financial year. Right? So in other words, we've shown you a slide around what the plan was the previous financial year, we now show you what the allocations is in the next financial year of the 1 billion rands. But to also put that side by side with the backlogs picture so that you can see, you know, the correlation. As you can see, the biggest backlog is in KZN, and consequently they receive, you know, the biggest allocation in terms of the total amount of money. I think 258,000 for both households, and the bulk infrastructure goes into that area. And then, then followed by the Eastern Cape, 200 million, and then Gauteng, very, very much in correlation with the backlogs that are available, that have been indicated as well. And you will see that it's a side-by-side. In terms of the DORA framework for that financial year, it's households, it's bulk infrastructure, and to some extent we'll be doing the rehabilitation that I've already alluded to. And then the same with Eskom for the financial year starting in the next few months, is that the biggest allocation in this instance goes to the Eastern Cape, followed by KwaZulu-Natal. And this is particularly relevant because of the way that the licensing works. In some instances, for example, in KZN, you find that there are no municipalities. I can't remember off the top of my head how many licensed municipalities are in the KwaZulu-Natal Midlands. You might find that outside of, you know, Echekwini, Msunduzi, Mhlatuzi, there are no other municipalities in KZN that have their own license. And as such, Eskom is the one that does the service provision, and that's how the allocations. And that's why the allocations are reflected on the Eskom side. Just some of the challenges that we have to deal with, and I suppose this is relevant in terms of going forward. We alluded to the issue of aging electricity infrastructure. We do not deal with it here in this presentation. But as I already indicated, there is a specific focus in the department in terms of which the EDI process will deal with this matter. We have developed what is called the approach to distribution asset management, and the idea is to go back and address all of that electricity infrastructure problems to the extent that those problems would raise questions here in Parliament, perhaps. I mean, questions around why do the lights go off when there is a small storm? You know, why in the winter do the lights go off? What about my bills and so on? It's all of those issues, and I know that there will be lots of questions around that, but we're saying it is a challenge. We do not deal with it today on its own. It is a subject matter that we perhaps would need more time to deal with. The issue about investment in the operations and maintenance by the different municipalities. You know, we create infrastructure so that it can serve a purpose. But if it is not maintained, then, you know, the people on the ground do not recognize it as being, you know, useful infrastructure. The issue of skills in the local government, or in relative terms, I mean, in the country it is a big problem, but I think in the local sphere of government it is more pronounced, particularly given the problems that they have around the electricity infrastructure that is aging. Incidentally, this is also addressed in that approach to distribution asset management. Sorry, are we repeating ourselves? Also? I think we're repeating ourselves. Now, just to very quickly touch base on the non-grid electrification program, just beyond that, so that you have a sense what we're talking about here. We indicated that we provide this in households, but we also provide this in schools and clinics, and in some instances we believe that it's been very, very successfully executed, despite the problems that minister has indicated. In the households, we're finding that there is some, you know, reluctance in some communities to accept the non-grid installation because it is regarded as being inferior, particularly where other communities in urban areas have a grid connection. But on the grid side, just to give you a sense about what we do in the school's environment, the system is much bigger than that, and the system is based on community involvement. So in other words, without a constant an institutional arrangement with the local community, the system does not work. We have a program that involves the installation of a DSTV connection with interactive media that the education department welcomes very, very much, because they use this as a medium for education and so on. And as you can imagine now, there's a lot of electronic equipment in the thing, and it's prone to vandalism and theft. And that's the point about how we do that. This is what happens when, you know, we get it wrong, so to speak. They steal the panels, they steal some of the batteries, and then we have to go back in order to address that. Just to also indicate that, in a way, this takes us back, but we believe that we are on top of this. We have a program that is called social facilitation, and social facilitation is to get the community to participate and to own this installation. We don't install it and walk away. The community becomes the one that, for example, uses it. This becomes a community center, and to the extent that, you know, it's used for watching football and other, you know, for example, community meetings at night and so on, we find that it tends to survive a lot more than it gets vandalized. We have started a process with the Department of Basic Education and with the Department of Health to go back to those systems that have been vandalized on condition that, you know, there is that social facilitation and that we deal with the problems decisively. Just in terms of concluding, to indicate that we believe that the 92% target of universal access by 2014 is feasible. In fact, there are certain municipalities in certain provinces that will happily reach universal access next year, Northern Cape Free State and the Northwest, and perhaps even the Western Cape, for that matter. We believe that we need a focused strategy around metros and informal settlements in order to provide, you know, the differentiation in our approaches between that kind of problem and the problem in the rural areas, where, for example, the bulk challenge is more the issue that we have to resolve. If I can maybe just take you to the slide that indicates how the municipalities have performed, and then I think we can, as I do that, to also indicate that we did include in the conclusion a slide around the impact of the electrification program. You know, usually we do this and we don't go back to check how this has made a difference in people's lives. And what we're finding is that the electrification program, both on the grid and the off-grid side, has a certain socioeconomic impact, and we assess that almost every year. We're finding that, let's start with the solar home systems, that more and more pupils, scholars are using the lighting in the night to study, whereas in the past it would have been either candles or no studying at all. We're finding that there is improved communication either through cell phones or through radio, and as such, messaging becomes very critical. I mean, if you think about the integration with other government objectives or other government programs, including, you know, just awareness building around, you know, HIV, AIDS, and other health-related matters, we're finding that it's making a huge impact. There are some gripes. I think, in fairness, we need to also indicate that the solar home system can only run a black and white TV, and it's something that we're addressing, because as we migrate towards the new digital thing, you know, it would not be fair to leave them behind. So we're hoping to upgrade the system so that we can then provide a color TV going forward. Municipal performance so far, I think Minister did allude to the mismatch in the financial years. Just to also indicate that in this current financial year, a treasury directive was issued that no municipal transfers must happen before July of the financial year. So in other words, even though the money was available from April, we were not allowed to transfer any money because Treasury's argument is that, you know, the cash flow management was more critical than the risk of putting the money in the municipalities, and yet most municipalities will only do anything after July. But that being said, you know, to date in terms of the transfers, as you can see, in the Eastern Cape, those municipalities have already had 91% of their allocations transferred according to the cash flows that they have asked for. And in terms of the expenditure, and the expenditure is, I suppose, the one that says how much of that has been converted into actual connections. The Eastern Cape is sitting at 27% to date. Oopsie. Sorry. It's sitting at 27%. Gauteng is sitting at 63%. KZN 28%. Northern Cape at 12%. The Western Cape at 39%, and so forth. On aggregate, it's about 37% in terms of converting it into actual connections for this financial year. So what happens now is that towards the end of June, there will be a lot more acceleration by the municipal program. But then to also indicate that what we do is that the connections that would have been made after June, after March, would not go into this financial year, but we would use the connections in the previous financial year in order to get a fair representation so that we're comparing apples with apples. Otherwise, what happens is that we stop at the time that the municipalities are still going to go ahead for the next 3 months, and yet we did not count the 3 months from the previous financial year, and that's how we deal with it. So at this point, there is a reconciliation as to how many connections were done after March of the previous financial year, but we don't want to give you a picture here that is overinflated. At this point, we're trying to say, let's watch it. It's still sitting at about 38% of performance relative to where we would like to be. Thank you very much. Thank you, Chair.
That's quite a mouthful. Thank you very much. Time for questions. Honorable Frailing.
Yes. Thank you, Chair, and thank you to the Minister for being here as well. It's good to see you. And particularly on this particular issue, which I think is vitally important. I'm just interested, I mean, the Minister said that 75% of households in South Africa are electrified at the moment. So 25% roughly is not electrified. What I'm interested in there is what percentage of that 25% that isn't electrified will be electrified through grid connections and will be electrified through off-grid connections? Because I'm interested to see how big the area is or how big the number of households are that will not, in fact, get grid connections and will have to deal with off-grid. And the reason why I ask that as well is that, you know, when I was in China, one of the factors behind China's growth of the PV manufacturing industry, in fact, was the China Brightness campaign. And so the initial market for the PV panels in China came from a rural electrification campaign that China ran. And I just think that this is a situation where we could, in fact, have joined up government, where, in fact, we could create a market for renewable energies here through a rural electrification campaign if we do this in a joined-up way. But having said that, if you would indulge me just for a few seconds, I want to just talk about an example of an Eastern Cape rural community that I work with, where I think a lot of these problems come to light. And I'd like to see how we work through this, because this is all kind of in the realm of statistics and it's in the realm of kind of plans, but where the rubber hits the kind of road, so to speak, a lot of this doesn't seem to be happening. And let me give you this example of a rural Eastern Cape community that I work with. The one example there is that there's no support for any of those households. So none of those households know how they can access the solar home program. Okay, they've got absolutely no information with regards to that. One of the households there, who was a former miner and had some spare money, went and bought a solar panel and put it into his hut. But there was no support for him in terms of telling him how to wire up that solar panel. And so his initial use of it actually led to the system breaking down. He's now subsequently got the information and he's put it into his hut and he's working and he's generating electricity. So he's very happy with that situation. But there's been no support from government at all with regards to that. The other example in that same community is that a private individual came and saw that there were no energy services and in fact built a very cheap wind turbine, which now all of the households in that area can go and charge their car batteries on and can get some electricity from. But once again, there was no support from government for that. So what I'm interested in is that I see that you've allocated certain concessionaires to rural areas in KwaZulu-Natal, Eastern Cape, and I think Limpopo. But what is their role, and what is their duty to actually roll out these kinds of solar home programs? Because I'm seeing none of it in the particular areas that I work in. And so I'm saying, what is the role of government? Have we got a targeted plan? Are we going to actually roll these out to these communities? And how will that be financed so that people can take advantage of it? I'd just be interested to hear your thoughts on that.
Followed by Honorable Khade.
Thank you, Chairperson. Mine is just my concern regarding the distribution network. That is, half of the network is in tatters, or according to EDI information, is very dysfunctional and in serious problems. And I think that should be a prerequisite for us to implement the INET program very effectively. And it's a huge concern. It might be a debate for another day, but I think Mr. Upon has mentioned that the Adam approach, the specific approach, that they're busy on that. But I'd like to have more information in terms of the seriousness of the problem and the time is of the essence in terms of the distribution network. We have a backlog in maintenance on that, as far as I'm concerned, of about 26 billion, and we just need to get that in place before we get to a very effective INET program. My other question is just regarding dysfunctional municipalities and the percentage of performance of 38%. I'm very pleased to see that through the process of the IDP process that it could be reallocated to Eskom to do the job, and should there not be more focus? And are we checking those municipalities where it's totally dysfunctional that we can, through this process, at least empower Eskom to see that we don't have the problem of dysfunctional municipalities? And should we interact with COPTA on this? And I'm sure the Minister has made progress on that, if I read it correctly. Thank you very much.
Honorable Khadebe, followed by Honorable Mike.
Yes. Thanks, Chair. I appreciate the emphasis that Mr. Apani has just made, that it's all about 38%, you know, the backlog that is happening. I just want to, you know, acknowledge, you know, the work that has been done since from 1994. If you can just look in terms of electricity distribution, you know, the department has worked very hard. And then, you know, must you know, give acknowledgement to where it's due. But my also question is that in terms of your breaking the new ground program, I'm trying to check whether you only work with the municipality through the IDPs only, because I wonder if the other stakeholders are also involved into this. Because I think they can be able also to contribute a lot, so that you also try and address, because it's one of the other challenges that you've just mentioned is that in one of your slides where you said it's an informal settlement where the houses are squeezed to each other,
you know, using the stakeholders around those areas can be able also to address, in order, you know, to deal with the issue of his nyoga-nyoga that, you know, also put the life and endangered of the children that are around there. I think you must be able to, you know, go vast in terms of, you know, the program. But in terms of the the current connections that you are also expanding on, I'm trying to check whether if you manage to also consider the aspect of your electricity generation around those areas. Because one thing that I've just noticed is that within those other areas that, you know, this issue is not being considered, when these connections continues, it put more loads in the electricity, where you find that, you know, smaller wind, you know, electricity trip, smaller rain, electricity trip, and, you know, it really disturbs, also damages most of these electronic resources of the state. I'm trying to check in terms of your consideration in terms of that. The other aspect, your refurbishment of your electricity infrastructure. Last time when EDI was engaging with us as a committee, was that their program was to ensure that to assist the municipalities refurbish their infrastructure. My concern is that I want to check as a department how far are you in terms of, you know, looking in terms of that, because the major concern was that the infrastructure, if it's not refurbished, you know, it's just a waste, because you'll continue installing new infrastructure, but once you not maintain the other ones, you know, it's just like you're not doing any progress. But the other thing that I just heard you say, that these solar panels, they can only play black and white television. I don't know how true is that. From my experience, I've done electrical engineering. It's not true. You must go do your proper research. But also, your focus, Minister, in terms of your rural community. One thing that I've noticed is that you've managed to expand your program. I know that in Mpumalanga, in one of these deep rural areas where I needed a tractor in order to go to the other side, there is connection there. But one thing that is not being done is that, you know, to publicize this thing, tell the community, tell us, you know, that you've managed to reach those areas. That, though, I think it's one of the other issues that we're always blaming you that, you know, this thing has not reached there, this thing has not reached there. You know, we must be able to also acknowledge, you say, that thing has been able to reach there. But what is important is that you must understand that, you know, this thing cannot happen in one day. It's a process. It's a, you know, it's gonna go there, and I think as members we must be able to also to submit areas that we don't see, you know, not being attended to, so that at least we can also try and put focus into it. Thanks, Chair.
Over to the department for now.
I'm sorry.
Nah.
Goodbye.
Sorry. Yeah, I know, it's because I was the first guy to greet you this morning. So, you know. Thank you very much. Just a couple of issues. I want to thank the minister for preempting, in fact, anticipating my big, big concern. And it was about acknowledging that with the money we currently have on the INEP, we're not going to make our 2014 target. And that's very, very important. And I'm thinking we need to do something, call their bluff. We need to call their bluff. We've got to use all the money we have so that by 2012 we have nothing left and we can go to the guys and then get some more money, because that's the only way we can get it. I read the documents with mixed feelings, and that comes out very, very clearly in the presentation. And one of my mixed feelings is this. Whilst we are doing everything we can to really blanket this country with electricity for everybody, we are having the migration that's happening. We're migrating, and so as we
fill the gap on the one side, we create huge and huge waiting lists on the others. And we've got, we know the nodes, the Gauteng one, the Western Cape, and the others. It's like we're on a treadmill. It's a moving target. It's never ever going to be exhausted. And that's really something that concerns me a lot. And I just wonder how we're going to be able to deal with that. Thank you.
Thanks, Chair. I unfortunately I went out to the bathroom, but so maybe Mr. Khailang, as usual, has expressed my view, but I'll just check in case. I think that for a change, I agree with Honorable Khadebe. He makes good sense when he says that we must acknowledge the progress made, and I think the presentation does show that. But you know, if there's one thing I think, maybe it's because of the history of this section, but energy is not very politically sexy, if you pardon the phrase. I mean, you know, it tends to be, because of the ESCOM history and everything, treated in a very kind of bureaucratic and fuddy-duddy way. If you look at countries where they've made radical progress in terms of changing attitudes, cultures, and so on, for instance, by ensuring that individual households can become electricity generators and communities and so on. It's been because it's been a concerted campaign and a lot of awareness built up. If there's one thing the presentation lacks, it's that kind of energy. You know, it seems to be very, and I'm not blaming the consultants and the civil servants. You know, it does seem that we are approaching the thing in a very pedestrian way. And I think if one thing we'd like to see from the government, and I know I say this because I know the minister is renowned for her passion about some of these things, is for us to see the attempt that we're looking at being emphasized around what can be done at that level locally. Because I think in the short term, that's the quickest way we're going to see progress. But secondly, and I did hear Mr. Khailan saying this, that in the medium to longer term, that shift is what is required to change the whole way in which people conceptualize and use energy. And I do find that that's somewhat lacking, that strategic notion in the document. Thanks, Chair.
No.
Thank you.
No more hands now? Yeah, let's... No, let's just be sensitive to the minister. You will have a second round. Yes, go for it, Minister.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson. I just want to thank the honorable members for their statements and inputs that they made. Some of the statements really take us a way forward, because I would believe that the government's motto of working together, we can do more, has been amply covered by the inputs that have been made here. I just want to indicate that if we have to go to the point that has been made by the Honorable Member Dexter in his closing input about communication, oh no, it's the Honorable Khadebe and also Honorable Dexter about communication. I think we have identified as a department the need for public education and public awareness, especially around the alternative energy sources. And the solar home systems are one of those that we believed that we needed to almost like increase the pace at which we have introduced the subject in the communities, but also to try and demystify the notion that it is an inferior technology and therefore people should not go for it. And also almost clear the minds of our people about the importance of us making it possible that everybody has got one way or the other of making it possible that they can have lighting and can be able to have energy for cooking or energy for all other sources. I think that home solar systems is being seen as government as one of the key poverty relief objectives, especially to reach those pictures that Mr. Apani put on the screen on the Eastern Cape type of topography and KZN in particular. Public awareness, if we go the route of educating the user, that particular user will be our best advocate for the system. And that is what we have realized, that because of lack of user education, there's been this notion that this system does not work well. And we have also agreed as a department that instead of diverting the money of the home solar systems to be able to address the connections in other areas, we need to educate and the communities. We have started seeing results because with the work of the Department of Rural Development, where the systems have been accepted, the very people that have used the system become advocates. I'll make an example about a typical situation in the Northern Cape where the first pilot for rural development in the Rimfastmark area, they have installed home solar systems. The community there is so excited because it is the first time that they had access to this particular energy source. And they have now realized the benefit because in the past they had to travel long distances to go and buy candles or paraffin or any other form of energy source. They have now become the best advocates to an extent that there's a community that has now written to me to say they have seen it in Rimfastmark and they would want to be given access to that service. So we believe that user education would be able to help us to drive the acceptance. And it is actually going to improve the lives of the poorest of the poor because you would then have renewable energy that is not going to get depleted. One thing that we also need to do is the education of our communities because you don't know what people do when they vandalize these systems. The theft of the panels is actually reversing the gains. And you would know that the challenge that we have as a country right now is that these technologies are still very expensive. You are correct, Honorable Grayling, it is import. And we need to be able to make sure that we massify the need for this so that we can localize the technology and manufacture locally in the same way create the necessary jobs. I also believe that the department is committed to making sure that we could roll out the systems. But we need your support as members to talk to your constituencies, talk to your communities, and make it possible that the user can initiate the demand. Because if it is user-initiated, you find the acceptance rate even being higher. Just like the example that you made, the fact that somebody had gone out to buy for himself and could even go out and get education on how to use the system. That would help us, and I would believe that we would get the necessary funding in the new year to drive the public education program. Honorable Khadebe, you spoke about, if I've got to go back to communication, on the successes of delivery on electricity. The challenge that we have is that you'd have heard Mr. Apani indicate that we give the money to municipalities. And the municipalities, in most instances, are the ones that have the end indicator of delivering on the electricity. But working together with the municipalities, we've been able to go with the initial shortening in initiatives for communities to be aware of the imminent delivery of electricity, but also the switch-ons, which has also helped us to do public education about energy efficiency. Because when going to switch ons, we also develop other programs to make sure that we can engage with communities. We've gone to communities like Lulundi, Nongoma, and others to make sure that we make them aware about the need for them to also protect the resources that they have been provided and that they can be able to, those who can afford to pay for the services so that those who still need services can be able to get it later. Mr. Apani will address the issue of the distribution network, and we really appreciate the acknowledgement of the work that government and the department has done since 1994 to advance the delivery of electricity services to the communities, but also to indicate that we believe that all those who are connected are owing it to those who are not connected. Because if I can save the little that I have been given, I would be able to make sure that those that the municipality is unable to connect because of lack of bulk would be able to get from that particular bulk. But I believe that most of the questions that have been raised here and the statements that have been raised here are very progressive. They are taking us forward, and I would believe that working together with this committee, we could be able to achieve the universal access that we have indicated in slide 14 as possible if we take the, how do you call it, the low road and the middle road. As we speak, I would believe personally that the middle road, which takes us to 2015-2014, is possible because of the fact that we have already done the budgetary calculations. And if we need to get more, we need, like you have indicated, that the 37% expenditure by municipality is not encouraging even Treasury to give us more money because we are delaying in terms of the expenditure, which is one way that we are working with municipalities on. On Saturday, I will be addressing a forum of SALGA to be able to talk to some of these issues related to the low expenditure rates, but also the non-expenditure in some of the municipalities. We agree and we believe that we need to increase the areas that must receive or get universal access by 2014. And in my own view, I believe that the municipalities that we have mentioned in the 2009 budget statement, the Insikayetu municipality in Ngobo and Hlonhlo, would also be as part of the Eastern Cape, an indication that even in the rural areas, there are areas and municipal areas that we can reach universal access. The one challenge we have is that out of the 284 municipalities, all of them want a piece of the budget. And you cannot then identify a particular area and say, let us finish off this area and then move on to the other areas. Because if we do that, we will then have even more impact. But if you have to split the budget across, which is understandable because each and every municipality wants to deliver, each and every area wants to see something happening, but we need the buy-in of the municipalities per province, per district, to understand that if in this district we can finish this municipality, our people will then be able to see that if it could happen in that particular municipality of Engobo or Mhlonhlo or Insikayetu, it can also happen in our municipality. Then we know that we've got to deal with, in line with the breaking new ground, with the new requirements. Every house that is built must have electricity. In that way, access will even come faster to the people, because electricity access is actually one of the key ingredients for us to realize the top five, the five priorities of government. Health, you can't do anything. Quite a number of our clinics would indicate to you, without access to electricity, they could not have the vaccines that are life-saving. The schools, without electricity, they could not have the necessary support for laboratories and computer centers, as well as rural development. The number of people who trek from the rural areas to the urban centers, who live big houses, massive houses, to go and stay in squalor, is a worrying factor. So it is important that the services like the electricity reach even the rural people so that they can start looking at how to start home industries and other means to improve their lives. But also we believe that crime can be dealt a blow if the areas are connected. Imagine a situation where you could be able to have access to street lighting, which we believe as a department we can actually retrofit to renewable energy like sun and wind. Street lights and traffic lights is one area that we could do that. But we believe that it is important that for us to deal a blow to crime, we need to illuminate the areas so that criminals don't have a place to hide. Decent and sustainable jobs can only happen with skilled people, and skilled people need to have an opportunity to study. And that is why we believe that we as a department, we might not be in a sexy area like the Honorable Member Dexter says, but the services and the input of energy makes everybody to be sexy, makes every sector to be sexy, because without energy, no sector could be able to deliver on their mandate. So I believe that we are like water, and soap and cosmetics that makes the body beautiful and everybody sees it. So we are the cosmetics, we are the lifeline of socioeconomic development. And I believe the technical questions would be answered by Honorable... not Honorable... Mr. Apani. The Honorable members might think that you've got ambitions to stand for Parliament. Thank you.
No, Chair, his title is the sexy Mr. Apani.
through you, Chair. Thank you, Minister. Just a question on the rehabilitation program. In fact, the DORA framework for this year does include provisions for the rehabilitation of certain municipal infrastructure, particularly where we cannot connect any more households because there's a rehabilitation program. So that particular issue is addressed. And then maybe just the last point about the whether we consult other stakeholders. Yes, we do. It's not just the, if you like, in the government sphere that we do consult. In fact, the community involvement makes for a very successful rather than a, you know, an unsuccessful approach to the breaking new ground. And then perhaps lastly, the point about the black and white TV was that it's not, yes, you can run it, but the systems that we provide are too small to do it, so we want to increase the capacity to be able to do that. Thank you.
Sorry, through you, Chair. I think the issue of out there from Honorable Grayling on the 25%, how much grid and how much non-grid are we going to provide going forward? Maybe you can just help on the track.
Yes, sorry about that. Forgot that, yeah. The approach to universal access is based on grid and non-grid. But what happens also is that there is an undertaking with the grid side in terms of which where there is what we call grid intrusion, then the solar home systems are migrated to an area where there is the biggest need. So in other words, it's a rolling program. So we also hear the comments that are being made here because suddenly there is one, not suddenly, but certainly there is an overlap now between the renewable energy program and what this is all about. Because now, when we do launch, for example, the RIFI program, you will find that there's going to be distributed generation in the rural areas. So we might not necessarily have to build all of that reticulation and the wires back to those areas. They would have their own generation. And I think it also addresses the question by Honorable Khadebe in the informal areas. It's something that I think is quite useful as a comment to factor into our program. Thank you.
Just the last one. On the issue of the distribution network that is dysfunctional, definitely we are acknowledging that is the case, and hence, therefore, that's why we are working at the moment at the team that is just going to start looking at the worst situation. Because at the moment we do have an idea which networks are in the worst condition and which networks can maybe survive the next 2 or 3 years. And also just to add on that, on the issues are also around the cable theft, Minister is engaging her colleagues in Justice Department to make sure that also area is addressed effectively.
Any follow-up questions?
Yeah, Chair, it was just the point that I was raising around the concessionaires, which gets mentioned, about what is their responsibility. Because as the Minister said, I mean, she's looking for our assistance as members of Parliament as well in terms of what we can inform communities. So what can I, for instance, inform this community in the rural Eastern Cape as to when... as to what assistance is available for them to get solar homes? I mean, what is it? How is this going to get rolled out? Are you doing it area by area, or can anyone apply for it? You know, what is the situation there?
Sorry. Thanks, Chair. I think there was one other, you know, issue that was raised, of which, as politicians, I think we should be able to take consideration of it.
issue of the political willingness that I think the minister has raised. I think we should be able to also take it very seriously, that there should be no island where, you know, it would block service delivery to the people. I believe those areas are in KZN, and I believe Honorable Lucas able to address it, you know, able to also link it with Zanele Makwaza.
Thank you.
Thank you, Pastor, for supporting us. Any response?
Chairperson, thank you. Thank you very much. Sorry, apologies. We omitted to respond to the question on the concessionaires. The concessionaire approach, first of all, is aligned with the legal dispensation. In other words, this is a service provision in a municipal area. So in the first instance, the concessionaire must have the buy-in of the municipality. So it's not like, you know, anybody can choose that I want to be in the concessionaire. It's the municipality that has to agree. Because remember, the concessions are coupled with the free basic electricity provision. So basically what happens is that the municipality then pays the free basic provision on a sustainable way in order to ensure that the service gets given to those people. So that's the first approach there. Certain geographical areas, I think there are about two districts in Limpopo, three in the Eastern Cape, and perhaps another three in KZN that have agreed in terms of this. And so if you're outside of that, it becomes difficult to participate in the program. But in terms of the concession agreement, the concessionaire provides the whole suite of services, including maintenance, including rehabilitation. In fact, we believe that there is also a negotiation around wanting to migrate, because some people want to move house from time to time and they say, the system belongs to me, so I would want to move. And how does it work in terms of the concession agreement? So yes, there are certain limitations, if you like, but it's something that perhaps we can engage directly as to, you know, getting what you call the perspective of the what is it, the rubber on the tire. Yes, yeah. Then we can try and improve on those kind of problems.
Thank you, Honourable Chairperson. In relation to the question and statement by Honourable Khatib, we have engaged with the government of KZN. I have had engagements with the Premier, with MEC Dube, as well as the mayor of one of the biggest municipalities where this situation is still even prevalent today, which is Mayor Blessed Gwala. And KZN convened an energy summit where there was also discussions about how to make it possible that within KZN itself there would be universal access. One of the areas that we have identified as immediate intervention is these islands, where you had a situation where, because constitutionally electrification is dealt with by national and municipality, the municipality was given the money, but in terms of the connections on the ground, you'd find that the connections followed a particular political line. This house is not of the party that is governing in the municipality, then it is jumped. And then the next house is from members of the party that is governing, and then it is given the electricity. So you found that in that particular part of our country, in KZN, and predominantly so, because I had gone to the Zululand district where I was at Nongoma, I was at Ulundi, I was what is it, Aryan Plaza? I come from Freiheit. I went to quite Emyati and all those type of areas. You literally see the islands where you see this house and the wires going over. And I only know that it's in the Bible there was some mention of Passover. But in reality, in South Africa, we cannot have that in terms of provide services to our people, because it means that we're using political membership to deliver services. And Premier Mkize agrees that It is something of the past in KZN. It will never happen, and we need to commit to the people of KZN, even those who have been jumped over by services, that we are coming back to them to provide them with services. We cannot use politics to deliver services to our people. And that is why we have agreed that the entire KZN area, where there's challenges of topography, will bring in the off-grid. Where there is challenges of areas where they are nearer to the grid, we will reconnect them. But there has been indication of service delivery, but it was deliberately used as a political weapon. And we want to say that will come to an end, and it has come to an end, with the commitment of the MEC, Nomusa Dube, as well as the previous MEC, Willis Mtunu, with whom we had gone to visit the areas to actually see the islands in place. They call them islands because the services is there, but you are sitting in an area which has not been provided. So I would want to appeal to members of the IFP, in particular in the House, that if they know of areas that are like that in other constituencies, they must also inform us so that we go and correct the problems that were created because of this particular anomaly that existed. But I believe that we've got a commitment as government to say, when we say universal access, we don't say universal access to some and others are going to be left out. And the fact that central government or the national government gives the money to municipalities don't have the right to use that money as a political weapon to justify what they are able to do, because the money doesn't start at a local government level. It is sent by central government. But I'm happy that we have engaged with the mayor also, that we need to be able to make sure that there is universal access. And universal access does not have card-carrying members.
thank you very much, Minister. I must thank the department for the illustrious presentation and also the questions and comments from the various members. I'm sure you may, even if you are wondering, you may end up conceding with me now that there was a reason, and a very valid one, that we should have put the briefing right at the beginning of our operational year, because if you reflect on a couple of other things, quite specific, you know, whether you're talking about SOEs, whether it's renewable energy, whether it's LPG, whether it's the charter, whether it's skills development, you'd find that this broad presentation today, you know, would give you a very good picture as to how we need to articulate those other specific areas, number one. Number two, we obviously are moving into the paradigm of renewable energy, but the reality and the truth of the matter is that a supply of electricity as one form of energy is still the predominant now. That's the sort of starting and continuing point. No matter how much we add wind energy, we add solar energy, and we are doing that on the basis of what exists now, and also on the basis of the universal access, which is driven by electricity at this stage in time. So it's on that basis that I'm actually very thankful once again to the minister and the department, you know, of the presentation that has been done, the information that has been shared. But I must be quick to say, I won't even touch questions, because even last night I've got a plethora of questions. I won't even touch them. I would encourage everyone to actually submit any further questions, and also even suggest as to how do we engage with this issue throughout the year and throughout the term until 2014. It's amongst the ongoing issues, but we just have to be very creative as to how we punctuate. It's an update, you know, around INEP, you know. We've got to give space to other issues, you know, as part of our oversight work, definitely. But also it has to keep on coming back as some kind of a reminder or a barometer, you know, or a sounding board to a greater extent. Minister, a couple of things. I'm not sure I missed it. You know, the socio-economic impact assessment, that's very, very fundamental to me. It's among things that I hope we'll share it, even if it's through writing, and share it with all rather in detail, so that members shouldn't just, you know, get a PowerPoint presentation. They should actually literally study it, because at the end of the day, supply of energy is developmental. It's not about just the technical thing, you know, concessionaires, you know, grid versus non-grid. It's about the impact of the, you know, provision, generation and distribution of energy on the overall development or transformation of our society. And also, just a few things that come in mind. The high, middle, and low road strategy. Please give us all what you have said, Mr. Apane. Give us more details. Members, I'll challenge you. We need to study and even maybe take about 30 minutes in one of our meetings and go back through that, because that's going to be one of our tools for oversight work. We need to be quite clear as to how to monitor the, you know, the department in terms of its implementation. Of course, not to leave out the challenge of maintenance and you know, rehabilitation of the existing distribution network. But Mr. Apane, if I picked you very well, you said you would even welcome input from us as to how do you balance between rehabilitation and roll out the new numbers. Once again, let's rattle our minds on that, because it's everybody's challenge, you know. Let's see where we strike the balance between the two. Let me restrain myself, but there's a lot, and I hope members as well, because I'm talking, you know, assuming that the minister would like to dash off now. We've taken note of the fact that there are a couple of things that have been raised by the department with the expectation and assumption that we have a role to play, and a very direct one. Amongst others is how we engage and interact with municipalities. Whilst the term island syndrome seems to be much located around KZN, but also what Honorable Freling was saying, it is some kind of an island syndrome, though it's devoid of the political connotation. And the question is, what role do I play as a public representative? I work with the members of the provincial legislature. I work with councillors. And amongst us, our duties is to draw the attention of either the municipality directly or even the minister, you know, that he has some kind of an island. Minister already had indicated to Mr. Apane that whilst you expected that there is no school that doesn't have electricity, but from time to time out pop up one school that you know, doesn't have electricity. You know, you ask yourself, how did we miss this one? So it's on the same you know, breath that you know, Honorable Freling, that you will still find those things. But to me, I would very much encourage that, don't even wait for the committee meeting. You know, an email to the minister, you know, would be very, very helpful, so that it starts making them be able to see where and how they should cover, whether they should add concessionaires, whether they should pay trade, persuade that, you know, the direct municipality. I'm not to go to other specific things, but still, Ngadam Tau, the ease of the moving target, you know, actually, it's actually not only going to force us as the executive to work with other departments, your COCTA, your rural development. It also must force us as the committee to start working with the other committees, because also they definitely would be having direct oversight and certain competencies which may be outside that. But for an overall, you know, visible impact in our work, at some stage we have to start talking about how do we engage the committee that deals with the COCTA, and how do we engage with the committee that deals with rural development, so that we can have a sense from their side to what extent are they addressing areas that of common focus. I see. I thought this was going to be a very exciting topic. It would go right until lunchtime. However, it seems as for today, we have exhausted, you know, the inputs. And once again, let me thank everyone who came today, and just as a, you know, last reminder, honourable members, please, any inputs, please direct them to me. We have to ensure that this is a rolling, you know, exercise, and even if we may not have a meeting, you know, on the very same topic, you know, very soon, but we will still have to engage with the department, even through correspondence. As I have already indicated, there are two areas that I really would like you to share with us, Minister, you know, through writing quite in detail the socio-economic impact and that high, middle, and low road. There could be others as well. Please, you're welcome to bring them. Otherwise, there's still, coffee is rather cold now. There's still some drinks and water at the back. Thank you very much, and we will see each other next week. God bless. The meeting is adjourned.
Oh, are you going to rock out now?
No, we're still now attending at the top house.
Oh, it's for campaign.
Oh, no.
Yeah, because I'm also around, and I'm also staying right not too far from the town house.
If you had coffee, just buy some and then maybe we can
make waiting because I'm on break. I'm right.
Okay. If you had coffee, don't have that. That's fine. I can arrange that.
Yeah.
So we'll change that.
Are you off rushing up now?
I just need to go
get something. Grab a drink or something.
Please.
please let's do that. I'm going to go to his office
and take it on my way out.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Bye-bye, guys. All right, guys.
Mm-hmm.